You just stay there and enjoy yourself. I won't tell Cuffy. Though Isaac was really Rush's dog, he was loved devotedly by all. John Doe, the other dog, was loved too, though it was generally conceded that he had less character and personal charm than Isaac. He also had less heart. Instead of mourning for the absent, he was at this minute in the kitchen, Randy knew, uttering low growls of pleading and watching for Cuffy to open the icebox door. Randy drifted about the room, touching the books, the boxing gloves, the music scores. She took a look into the closet, even, but it depressed her. It was so unnaturally neat. The shirts hung upon hangers, the shoes in pairs against the wall instead of upside down and on their sides all over the floor, leading their own independent lives the way they usually did. "And it will probably always look like this now, even when he's home," mourned Randy. "They teach them to be neat at boarding school." She sighed deeply, patted Isaac again, and departed from the room, leaving the door open so Isaac could come and go. Next, she went into her elder sister Mona's room. This was not quite such a shock, for Mona was a fairly tidy girl, and the room did not look so very different from the way it did when she was at home. Still, it was different. It couldn't fool Randy. Mona was the actress of the family, and a real actress at that. For several winters now, she had played the young girl's part in a radio program that was broadcast from a city station, and this year it had been decided that she should go to school in the city as well, since it would save travel to and fro. She was staying with a Melendi's beloved friend, Mrs. Oliphant, an independent old lady with an extra bedroom and a great fondness for children, particularly the Melendi children. Randy went to the ruffled dressing table which Mona had decorated herself, using an old organdy party dress to make the ruffle. If you knew where to look, you could still find the large turnip-shaped ink stain which had caused the end of its career as a party dress. On top of the table was a collection of little perfume bottles. Mona was proud of these and did not like anyone to meddle with them, but after all, she was away. Randy unstoppered first one bottle and then the next, pressing each against her nose in turn. From every one she dabbed a little perfume on her wishbone. Afterward, she wished she hadn't. She couldn't smell the plain air anymore. A great rosette of fancy scents seemed fastened to the end of her nose, and did not in any way make her feel better. She leaned down and looked into the little triple mirror on the dressing table. Three gloomy selves looked back. "Ugly thing," she said, scowling. "Hideous old mule face." Actually, she was not ugly at all, and when she thought about it, did not usually consider herself so. It was the feeling behind the face that she addressed. She was not often in such a bad mood, and had rarely in her life had a chance to be lonesome. Now she was both. "And goodness knows when I'll stop feeling this way," she lamented to herself. "First they'll all be away at school for years, and then they'll be away at college for years, and then, gosh, I suppose they'll all get married." She went out of Mona's room, still wrapped in a cloud of mixed perfumes, and, deciding to do the thing thoroughly, went up the stairs through the office, which was what the Melendis called their playroom, and up yet another short, steep flight to the cupola at the very top of the house. This was the personal domain of the Melendis' adopted brother, Mark, who had gone away to school with Rush. The cupola was a small, light room, really a sort of little cabin on the roof, with a window in each wall for each direction, one apiece for east, west, north, and south. Randy chose the north window to press her nose against, as that presented the gloomiest view. It seemed suitable to her that the weather was unfriendly, not raining, but about to rain, gray, sullen, with all the color gone from everything. Even the grass looked gray, and the old tall Norway spruces that guarded the house seemed black and shabby like monstrous, molting crows. "This is the way it will always be, every day when I come home from school from now on," said Randy unreasonably as she looked north toward the town of Carthage. The view suddenly buckled and divided before her eyes as first one and then another large tear swelled and wobbled and rolled down her cheek. It was a long time since she had cried, and she made the most of it. Afterward, she felt better. She wiped her eyes on the edge of Mark's bedspread, and, still hiccuping faintly, went down the steep little stairs. Oliver was sitting on the floor of the office. There were four chairs, a couch, and a piano stool in the office, but Oliver preferred the floor. He looked rather awed. "You've been crying," he said. "I know it," said Randy. "I heard you, but I didn't think I should interrupt," Oliver said. He stood up. "Don't feel so bad, Randy. It's going to be okay, probably. I feel lonesome too, kind of, but it's going to be okay." "I suppose you do feel lonesome, don't you?" said Randy, who had not considered this before. She patted his shoulder blade. "You're a nice boy. I ought to appreciate you more." "You appreciate me enough," Oliver said. "Let's ask Cuffy for something to eat," Randy suggested. "Crying always makes me hungry." They clattered down the stairs, and the cheerful noise brought Isaac out of Rush's room. He went down the next flight with them, barking sociably all the way. "Lambs!" said Cuffy, as they all exploded into the kitchen, and John Doe raised his voice in greeting. "I thought less young ones around would mean less noise, but it don't seem to work out like that. Here now, I made a cake right after lunch, and I kept the frosting bowl for you to lick. I didn't want to give it to you before. And there's two bones in the icebox for the dogs. Better give them to him now, Oliver, so's we can have some peace." Randy hugged Cuffy's familiar waist, or what would have been a waist on a thinner person. It was thick, warm, solid, and creaked faintly when she moved, for Cuffy wore strong, old-fashioned corsets. Everything about her, the creaking, the gentle scolding, the kind, preoccupied face, contributed to the Melendi children's conviction that their home was the coziest, pleasantest place in the world. Luckily, Cuffy had made a fudge cake, as fudge frosting certainly provides the best bowl licking. Randy and Oliver chipped and scraped with two big spoons, their faces happy and absorbed in every grief forgotten. "Now, clear out and see if there's any mail, why don't you?" said Cuffy, when the bowl was completely polished. "It's too soon to hear from any of them yet," said Randy. "Nevertheless, there just might be a letter, and I want to mop this kitchen, and take those two beasts with you." Oliver and Randy and the dogs departed by the back door. The day was very gray and still. Leaves dropped from trees because their stems had failed them. There was no wind. They came down sadly, idly through the air. Randy walked slowly, and Oliver dawdled a little way behind her, stopping now and then to look at a bug, to throw a pebble. Isaac and John Doe were of a different frame of mind. They sniffed, zigzagged, cavorted. Being alive and out of doors were enough to make them happy. "In the mailbox," predicted Randy, "there will be bills and nothing else." "No, not today," said Oliver, who was a practical boy. "It's not the first of the month, and it's not the middle." "All right, so then there'll just be postcards advertising sales of dishpans and men's shoes and other dull things," said Randy, determined to look on the dark side as long as possible. The mailbox appeared the same as usual, its flag alert, its mouth closed. When they opened it, they found three things inside. A letter for Cuffy from her cousin Mrs. Theobald, a postal card advertising, oddly enough, a sale of men's shoes, and a medium-sized envelope addressed in unfamiliar handwriting to Miss Miranda Melendi and Master Oliver Melendi. "Heaven's sake," said Randy. "Who could it be from? It's not any of their writing or writings or however you say it." "It looks like a grown-up's writing," Oliver decided. "Where's it from?" "The postmark says New York. September 12th, 11 a.m., it says. That could be anybody. We know thousands of people in New York." "Well, for Pete's sake, open it," said Oliver, who preferred facts to mysteries any day. Randy tore open the envelope. Inside it was a sheet of matching blue paper on which a poem was written. She read it aloud to Oliver. "I point a clue for you to find, but find me first. Nearby I stand. Among the tallest of my kind, at 4 o'clock on a fine day, my shadow's peak lies on the land, where, if you spade the earth away, a golden clue will come to hand and speed you on the perilous way." Underneath, at the bottom of the page,